All right, Sandy, thank you so much. Now I would like to welcome Derek H. He's our speaker. I have the pleasure of hearing him at our Sunday Big Book Workshop, and I'm so excited to hear him speak. Thank you, Derek, for coming out. Go ahead.
Good afternoon, family. My name is Derek, and I'm an alcoholic. And thank you for having me. Full disclosure, I'm just getting over the coronavirus, but you guys are social distance, so you probably don't have to worry about catching it. So if I start coughing, just give me a minute. I'll get myself together, and we'll continue on. Like I said, I'm Derek, and I'm an alcoholic, and I'm real grateful to be here, and I'm real grateful to be sober. And on a Sunday afternoon, the sky is beautiful. And even if it was raining, it'd be a beautiful day because that's just how my life works today. Every day is a beautiful day. Every day that I don't have to wake up or come to, or I don't wake up and I'm in a jail cell, or I don't remember what I did and who I did it to, is a beautiful day for me. I went to my first treatment program back in 1988. And yeah, 1988, wow, that seems like a long, long time ago. And I'd love to say from 1988 to 2022, I've been sober ever since. I'd love to tell you that, but that's just not my story. My story is I went in and out, in and out, in and out, in and out. And the reason why I kept going in and out is not because the program that's outlined in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous doesn't work. That's not why I kept going in and out. I kept going in and out because I knew you people were doing this the hard way. I knew it had to be a way to stay sober without going to these meetings. You know, it had to be a way to stay sober without working the steps. And when I got here, I'd be damned with getting a sponsor. I didn't even understand the concept. I don't like people telling me what to do. I never liked people telling me what to do. You know, I didn't like my mom telling me what to do when I was a kid. I didn't like my dad telling me what to do. I didn't like the military telling me what to do. I didn't like the COs in jail telling me what to do. You know, I just don't like people to tell me what to do. And so I didn't understand the concept when you said I have to come here and ask somebody to tell me what to do. Like, that just didn't make sense to me. Why would I do that? You know, I don't want you to tell me nothing. Like, I'm the type of alcoholic that, you know, I could be doing something completely wrong. I mean, completely wrong. And you'll come on here and say, Derek, you know, that it doesn't go like that. And I'll say, I know. And then I'll begin to justify why I'm doing it the wrong way, because I don't want you to know I didn't know. You know what I mean? That's the kind of alcoholic I am. So anyway, I'm grateful. I'm grateful that Alcoholics Anonymous introduced me to somebody that I didn't even really know. And that was the real me. You know, I got to see how selfish I was. I got to see that I'm really a selfish, self-centered individual. And that I'm driven by 100 different forms of fear. You know, even at my best, when I think that I'm doing something that is unselfish, by doing the work, I figured out and I was taught that even at my best, I'm still selfish. I was listening to Bill share, And he brought back something to my memory when I was in treatment. When I was in treatment, I remember my sponsor told me that I needed to do something for someone and not tell anybody about it. Well, I don't know if you be an alcoholic like me and you seek that kind of approval, that is almost an impossible task. And so I had a gentleman in the program with me, and back then they had these little CD players. This is long before the new technology we have now, but they had these CD players that people would walk around, and they put these headphones on and they'd walk around with them. And this one guy, every day I'd see him asking somebody, could he use their CD player? And I happen to have two. And so I talked to my sponsor, and he said, well, you got to do something and you can't tell nobody you did it. So I went in his room and I put the CD player on his pillow and I left it there and I didn't say a word. And then every week we would have this chapel meeting, and, you know, people would share what they're grateful for. And So this guy stood up and said, you know, I'm really grateful. Somebody gave me a CD player. I don't know who it was, but I've been listening to this CD and it really lifts my spirits. And I really think, you know, I want to thank the person that did it because I'm so grateful for this CD player. And it took everything in me not to jump up and say, it was me, because I wanted people to know that I did it. So that was my first introduction to doing something and not being able to say something about it. And as a result of that, I figured out that what I was looking for to get from the acknowledgement I had already gotten from God, that feeling that I got by doing something, I didn't need other people to know. I just knew me and God knew. And that began to be enough for me. You know, I often share about this, you know, this story that I tell, that my sister, she adopted me in this program. She was one of our members and she went on to the big meeting in the sky. And she adopted me, and she was an amazing woman. Her name was Dr. Yvonne Palmer. And not only was she a doctor, she was a therapist, she was a mother, she was a musician. She was just an incredible woman. And she used to tell this story, and I'll tell it to you today. You know, there was a story about a little Indian boy and a stockbroker. And the little Indian boy and the stockbroker were on the streets of New York. And if any of you ever been to New York, New York is busy. Things are moving. People are loud. It's fast. Everything's going on. And they were standing on the streets of New York. And the little Indian boy told the stockbroker, he said, "Shh, did you hear that? Bob, did you hear that? Sandy, did you hear that?" And the stockbroker said, "Hear what?" And he said, "Did you hear the cricket?" And the stockbroker said, "The cricket?" He said, "Yeah, did you hear the cricket?" He said, "I didn't hear any cricket." So the little Indian boy said, "Well, come with me." And he took him down the street, then down an alley, then up a flight of stairs. And at the top of the stairs was a flower pot. He picked up the flower pot and there was a cricket. And the stockbroker said, "Now, how in the hell did you hear that?" And the little Indian boy laughed and he said, "Oh, it was simple." And he put the flower pot back down on the cricket. He took the stockbroker back down the stairs, took him back down the street, and they were headed towards the spot where they first stood. And the little Indian boy reached in his pocket and he pulled out a silver dollar and he flicked it over his shoulder. And when it hit the ground, the stockbroker spun around and so did everybody else. And the little Indian boy just laughed. He said, "See, you hear what you're listening for. I'm here to share with you today that you're going to hear what you're listening for. If you're listening for me to say something that you don't agree with, you're going to hear that. If you're listening for me to say something that you haven't found in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to hear that. But if you're here to hear the message of recovery, you'll hear that too. You hear what you're listening for. I'm so grateful that I'm here by the grace and mercy of a loving God, of my own understanding, of my own understanding. And I found him here in these rooms. Grace, unmerited favor. That means I didn't do anything to earn this. That means I didn't do anything that was so honorable, so respectable, so decent that I could say I earned my seat in Alcoholics Anonymous. I hear people say that, but, and I understand why they say that. That's just not my experience. If I was given one day in jail for every crime I committed while I was under the influence, I should be doing back-to-back life sentences. That's what I earned. I didn't earn this. I didn't earn the life that I have. I didn't earn the friends that I have. You know, what I earned was a jail cell. What I earned was for my parents to hope to God that I didn't come nowhere on the block during the holidays. What I earned was for my children to wish they had another man to call their father. That's what I earned. I'm here by grace, unmerited favor. I'm here by I'm sober by grace and mercy, mercy, mercy. I don't know. Some of you guys might have been in front of the judge maybe once or twice, like myself, you know, I don't know. And you know, when you go to court this time and you know they got you, I'm not talking about, you know, when you're going to get a plea bargain. I'm not talking about when the witness is not going to show up. I'm talking about this time they got you. They start reading off the counts. Mr. Howard, count one, count two, count three. And I know they got me. When they know, when you know they got you, and what you decide to do is you plead guilty and you throw yourself on the mercy of the court. What am I saying? Your Honor, I did all that. Everything you said I did that. Just please don't give me what I deserve. Mercy. If there's any truth to what goes around comes around, God, please don't give me what I deserve. God, please don't let happen to me what I did to other people. God, please don't let people take from me what I took from other people. God, please don't let me harm people. People harm me the way I harmed them. Just don't give me what I deserve. That's mercy. If you're here today and you look back through your past, you might need some mercy too. You may not want to come back around to you what you put out there. You may not want to harm your children the way you harmed other people's children. You may not want your children to do to you what you did to some of your parents. You might want some mercy. I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful that I had the experience. You know, they said getting experience was painful, but having experience is priceless. I had to go back in and out, in and out, in and out, because I needed to become convinced. I needed to become convinced to my innermost self that I was alcoholic. I couldn't do it because you told me. You could have pointed out all the reasons why you thought that I had a problem with alcohol. But until I became convinced to my innermost self, see, because the first time I went into treatment, I knew I had a problem with other party favors. But I wasn't convinced I was an alcoholic. I just wasn't. But the program, because I'm a veteran, I went to the VA hospital, and that back then they had a AA program, and they said, you have to be an alcoholic if you want to get treatment. And so I said, I'm an alcoholic. And I went into treatment, and back then it was a 28-day program. And I don't know about you, but 28 days is only long enough for me to regroup so I can recap. I don't know, it's not long enough, you know, but back then it was a 28-day program. And so I went to this 28-day program, and they told me to stand up for 28 days every day. And I had to say my name and say that I was an alcoholic. And I did that. I stood up for 28 days and I said, hi, Reggie, I'm an alcoholic. Hey, what's going on, Chris? I'm an alcoholic. Hey, nice to meet you. I'm Derek. I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to share with you because you stand up in a meeting and you say you're an alcoholic. It don't make you an alcoholic. You might be the casual or the moderate, or you might be around here just wasting some good party time. You better find out what your truth is. You better find out if you really be alcoholic. And if you really be alcoholic and you're drinking and having a problem, or if you're having a problem with your drinking, you got a serious problem. You have a serious problem. And so I got out of that treatment program, and they told me some things when I got out of treatment. They said, look here, you need to go to meetings. You need to work the steps. You need to get a sponsor, and you need to find a God of your understanding. Well, I didn't want to do none of that. I wasn't going to go to no meetings. I wasn't going to work no steps, and I wasn't going to get no sponsor. I just wasn't going to drink no matter what. Shortly after that, I got drunk. So then I go back to another program in 1989, and this time I'm sweetly reasonable. This time I'm going to come to these meetings. But I ain't going to work no steps, and I'm not going to get a sponsor. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1990, and this time, I'm going to get me one of them sponsor dudes, and I'm going to go to meetings, but I'm still not going to work no steps. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1991. And this time, I'm going to work the steps and not go to meetings because I don't want you to know that I relapsed. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1992. And this time, I'm going to work the steps with a sponsor and not go to meetings. Shortly after that, I got loaded. I go back to another program in 1993. Do you understand what I'm trying to say? I tried this thing every imaginable way, but the result was nil until I let go absolutely. Now, I'm not going to come in here and tell you what you need to do. I'm not going to tell you you got to go to meetings and you better work the steps and you better get a sponsor because I don't know what you got to do. I know what I got to do. I know I got to keep coming to meetings so I can see what happens to people who stop going to meetings. I got to work these steps because I got to face and be rid of those things that block me from the power that keeps me sober. And I got to have a sponsor. You know, sometimes we make too big a deal about this sponsor thing. See, a sponsor is just somebody that's on the same road that you on. They're just a little bit further up ahead. And every now and then they'll call back and said, you might need to pump your brakes because there's some curves coming up. That's what my sponsor does for me. Because I cannot recall with sufficient force the pain and suffering of a week or a month ago. How am I going to recall after a decade or two? I can't recall with sufficient force, but the honesty that I've shared with my sponsor, oh, he'll remind me. He'll remind me of what I was doing, when I was doing it, and what happened the last time, because he can recall when I can't. I need somebody to tell the truth to. See, because this is a program of honesty. It says, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. Those who cannot recover are people who cannot or will not completely give themselves to this simple program. What is the simple program? It says some of them are constitutionally incapable of being what? Honest. This is a program of honesty. Am I constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself? If I am constitutionally incapable of being honest with myself, how do I know if I'm being honest when I say that? Oh, y'all didn't catch that. If I'm constitutionally incapable of being honest, how do I honestly know when I'm saying that I'm constitutionally incapable? I might be lying then because that's just the type of alcoholic I am. So now I need somebody on planet Earth to tell the truth to. I need somebody on planet Earth to tell the truth to, because if there's not somebody on planet Earth that I tell the whole truth, I'm not talking about part of the truth. The benefit of having a sponsor is you tell them the whole truth. See, because there's two ways to lie. There's a lie by omission and there's a lie by commission. A lie by omission is I leave something out. A lie by commission is an out and out lie. If there's nobody on planet Earth that I've told the whole truth to, then my whole life is a lie because I'm not capable of telling all of you all the truth. I might tell you a little bit of the truth. I might tell you a little bit of the truth, but I'm not going to tell all of y'all none of the truth because my ego separates me from help. My ego continues to edge God out. I don't know that because the way my mind works, I suffer with an unsatisfied mind. What is an unsatisfied mind? An unsatisfied mind is I have the type of mind that wants more. I had to come to understand that me and my thinking is what gets me into these things. And then I try to use the same brain that got me into it to get me out of what it just got me into. Y'all understand what I'm saying? This is the kind of mind that I have. I have the mind of an alcoholic, and I had to come to understand that. I've been sober for a few decades now, and I can tell you that I still suffer from strange, peculiar mental twists. I still have some insane thoughts, even though I'm sober. I'm talking about truly insane thoughts. Like, I remember, you know, I ride a motorcycle, and I'd be on my motorcycle sometimes, and I'll be driving, and I'll pull up to a stoplight, you know, and I got license, insurance, and registration, so I'm not worried about none of that today. And I look over at the police, and when I look over at the police, when they're sitting next to me, my mind will say something like this. I wonder what would have happened, Derek, if you just spit on the police and drive off real fast. Now, where does that come from? That's insanity. I know what's going to happen. I'm going to be in a high-speed chase. Y'all going to see me on the 5 o'clock news, and they probably going to whoop my behind. I know this, but my mind still says things like that to me because I have the mind of an alcoholic. So I'm not in control of what my mind comes up with because it comes up with some strange things. But I am in control of how I respond to that. And so I know now today I say, thank you for sharing. Now you can shut the hell up. I have to tell myself that. My mind tells me things that I know mean me no good. I know for a fact that if I learned to not listen to the voices that tell me to do the things that it tells me to do, I could stay out of a lot of trouble. If I spend half my time minding my business and the other half leaving yours alone, I won't have no time to get in no mess. So now, I go back to this treatment facility, and this time, I'm sweetly reasonable because I'm homeless. I'm sleeping under a freeway. I've burned all the bridges. There's nowhere I can go, and nobody's messing with me no more. I can't go to nobody's house. I can't sleep on nobody's couch. I've spent everything that I've had. I'm homeless. I got a plastic bag and a t-shirt. And a dirty pair of jeans that I'm wearing. I got a rash on the bottom half of my body because I haven't had a bath in over 2 months. I'm a foot soldier. When I'm out there, I'm out there. There's no coming back. I have to either be incarcerated or I have to be in put in a hospital. I'm not the type that can just turn around and say, okay, well, that's enough. I think I'm gonna stop. I'm of the hopeless variety. Once I start, I can't stop. I have to be stopped. I have to be saved from me. It's a terrible thing when you become the monster. It's a terrible thing when you become the monster. I had a wife and I had kids. And, you know, my job as a husband and as a parent is to protect my family and protect my children. But it's a terrible thing when you are the thing that they need protecting from. I became a very, very bad, bad person. And what happened was, as a result of this work, I realized that I wasn't a bad person trying to get good. I was a sick person trying to get well. There was something wrong with me because when I'm sober, I don't do the things that I do. I don't harm people the way I harm people. I don't think the way I think when I'm under the influence. So I had to get some help. Step one said I was powerless and my life was unmanageable. Well, that was an easy one for me. I could clearly see I was powerless. I didn't have the power to feed myself even when I had food stamps. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. I didn't have the power to feed myself. I would get my stamps and next thing I know, I'm broke and I ain't bought no food. I didn't know how that happened, but it happened. Not once, not twice, but every time. Because I told myself, I'm just going to get me one. And the next thing I know, I'm on a run and I don't come back and I don't got no food stamps and I ain't got no food. I'm powerless and my life is unmanageable. I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. I came to believe. That's why I came. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous because I came here to believe that there was something that could bring me back to a place of something that looked like normal, because I'm living like a savage. I'm living like a monster. And I came here to believe that. That's why I came. I came here so that I could believe that there was something out there that could fix me, because I like cars. And I got quite a few cars now. And you know, some of the cars I can't fix. And if I can't fix it, what I do is I take my car to the mechanic. And you know, when I take it to the mechanic, I'm hoping he can fix it. And if he can't fix it, then I'm forced to take it to the dealer. I don't like taking it to the dealer because the dealer is expensive, but I'm gonna take it to the dealer. If the dealer can't fix it, I have to have it sent back to the manufacturer. I'm broken. I got here broken. I tried to fix me and I couldn't fix me. I went to you and tried to get you to fix me and you couldn't fix me. And then so I realized that when I can't fix me and you can't fix me, surely he who created me can fix me. So I had to take me back to the manufacturer. I had to go back to he who created me because I was broken and I could not do it and you could not do it either. She was not, no matter how much I loved my wife, she was not enough to keep me from taking a drink. Love of my children was not enough to keep me from taking a drink. Love of your job, love of your cars, love of your life is not enough to keep you from taking a drink. I needed a power. So I came to believe that a power greater than myself could restore me to sanity. Then I made a decision. I made a decision to turn my will and my life over to the care of God as I understood him. If you read it, it says understood, not understand. Made a decision to turn my will, my thinking, and my life, my actions, over to the care of God as I understood. And why does it say understood and not understand? Because more will be revealed. I didn't understand God the way you guys understood God. When I got here, I knew that was going to be a problem for me, that step three was going to be an issue. Because I don't understand God the way you understand God. Oh, I know you guys know what his name is. You know what religion he's in. You know how to pray to him. I know you guys know, but I didn't know. I didn't know because I don't come from where you come from. See, my experience is this. As a child, I was baptized Catholic. I went to Catholic school. I wore those little salt and pepper pants, that little pinstripe shirt. And I believed in that God because I had childlike faith. And then one day my mother came to me and she said, "Ooh, time out. I'm sorry. We got the wrong religion. We're not going to be Catholics no more. We're going to be Muslims." I didn't even know what a Muslim was. I didn't even know what it was. I just knew that I couldn't celebrate Christmas and I couldn't eat pork. And that just wasn't attractive to a child. It just wasn't. You know, I couldn't have bacon and I couldn't celebrate Christmas. So that just wasn't going to work well for me. You know what I mean? And so But I started to believe in that religion because I had childlike faith. And then as I got older, I got to high school and I met my ex-wife. And she was a Christian. And boy, she was the closest thing to God I'd ever seen. I swear, she didn't drink. She didn't smoke. She didn't curse. She went to church 3 times a week and twice on Sundays. And when I met her, she was a virgin. So I knew she had a God. So while I'm going in and out, and you people telling me, I gotta find God. I went back looking for him. The first time I relapsed back in 1988, I went back to the Catholic Church. And when I went to the Catholic Church, they told me to go to confession. And I went to confession and they told me to do these Hail Marys and Our Fathers on the rosary beads. And I did that. I did everything they told me to do. Shortly after that, I got loaded. So I said, okay, when I went back into treatment in 1989, when I got out of treatment, I went back looking for God again. So this time I go back to the Nation of Islam. I take my Shahada. That means I make Salat, I pray on my face 5 times a day. I read, I fast, I stop eating bacon. I did everything they told me to do, everything. And then shortly after that, I got loaded again. So I said, I know why I can't stay sober. I know why. Because I ain't been saved. That's got to be it. I ain't been saved. So what do? I go back to the Christian church. They laid hands on me. They prayed the demons out of me. I got baptized, anointed with oil, spoke in tongues. I did all that. And then I got loaded. Now, I'm not here telling you that religion don't work. I'm not telling you religion don't work. Because if you read the big book, it says we should be quick to see where religious people have been right all along. So I'm not telling you that religion don't work. What I'm telling you is it didn't work for me. And the reason why it didn't work for me is because I didn't believe it deep down in my gut. See, that Catholic God was my daddy's God. That Muslim God, that's my mama's God. That Christian God, oh, that's my ex-wife's God. But where was my God? I didn't have no God. My conception of God was everybody I thought was God. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank God in his infinite wisdom, he saw fit to create a place like this for people like me so I could find my way back home. I don't know what the steps are for you, but the steps for me are a path back to God. Now, if God lead me back to a religion, I'm going to go. But for now, he led me to Alcoholics Anonymous. So for now, I think I'll stay. Find you a God of your own understanding. And your conception of God is sufficient enough for you, just like mine is for me. I don't debate the Bible and the Torah and the Quran with people. I don't debate religion with people. That's just not my deal. I'll leave that to all you religious scholars. I found me a God that I could understand. And if you can't find a God that you can understand, hell, find a God that understands you. Find a God that understands you don't understand. Find that God and ask that God to help you recreate your life. August 13th, 1993. I checked myself back into the Salvation Army in Santa Monica, more dead than alive. When I checked myself back into that program, I decided I was going to get honest with God. I'm talking about rigorously honest, because that's what the book said I needed to do. And so I took myself into the privacy of my own space, which happened to be a bathroom stall. And I went in that bathroom stall and I got honest with God. And I said, look here, God, I don't even really know what your name is no more. I don't know what religion you really in. All I know, God, is that I need you and I need you now. And if you don't stand between me and the next drink, I'm gonna get drunk. See, I have surrendered. I've given up on myself. My job is not to keep me sober. That's God's job. My job is to stay in touch with the power that gives me the power to keep me sober. I found a God that I could understand, and that God has helped me recreate my life. But believing in God and reliance on God is two different things. See, I have a reliance on this power. I rely on this power to do for me what I'm unable to do for myself. Belief in God and reliance in God is two different things. I know a lot of people that believe in God. I know some real religious scholars that believe in God. But see, here's the difference between belief in God and reliance on God. If you took a telephone pole here and a telephone pole here, and you put a wire across two telephone poles, and then you had a man go up there with a wheelbarrow, and he walked from one side of the telephone pole across the high wire pushing a wheelbarrow, and he got to the other side of the high wire. And then he turned around and he asked all the crowds of people, do you believe that I can make it back across? A lot of you guys would say, yeah, I believe it because I seen it. That's belief in God. But if you're relying on this guy to make it back across, get your behind in the wheelbarrow. That's the difference. When you're relying on him, that means if he don't do it, you got something to lose. Belief and reliance. A lot of people believe in God because they've seen him work in other people's lives, but they're not relying on him to work in their own. I'm relying on God. My reliance has to be in this power that is greater than me to keep me from doing the things that I do when my mind takes over, when my ego gets back in charge. I have to continue to stay in prayer and meditation. I try to make me small and him big. And that ain't always easy to do, but I can tell when I'm out of bounds. See, because there's some things that I call indicators that something is not quite going right in my life. That's if I'm running into conflict and confusion with everybody that I come in contact with, I'm probably unplugged. I've probably been disconnected from the power. If I'm restless, irritable, and discontent all the time, I'm probably disconnected. When I got out of jail, I remember when I was in, I remember when I got home, I thought, you know what? I'm going to fill my life up with all the things that I want that I couldn't have. You know, I got all kinds of zoom zooms and wham whams in the refrigerator. Some of y'all know what I'm talking about. I got candy and cookies and snacks and all the things that I couldn't have before. But I can tell you something about filling your refrigerator up. You can fill your refrigerator up with everything that you desire. Steak, shrimp, whatever you like, whatever your thing is, fill your refrigerator up with that. And then disconnect the plug from the power. Everything in your refrigerator is going to spoil. And it don't go all bad at once. First the milk go bad, then the dairy go bad, then the meat start going bad. It starts falling apart. If everything in your life is falling apart, check your plug. You might be disconnected. If everything and everybody is irritating you, you may be disconnected. If things are starting to fall apart around you and you are the common denominator, you may be disconnected. If you find yourself constantly irritated by people, places, and things, you may be disconnected. See, because when I'm connected, those people are still irritating. I'm just not irritated. When I'm connected, things can be falling apart around me, but there's something that comes over me, a calm that says, everything's gonna be okay. It don't mean life is gonna be perfect all the time. What it does mean is that when things go wrong, I tapped into a power that lets me know it's still gonna be all right. I thank God for Alcoholics Anonymous, and I thank God for people like you. You people taught me things that I didn't even know. You taught me how to be a father. You taught me how to be a father. See, I don't know, a lot of homes and the people that I grew up with, you know, we had parents that didn't believe in time out. They believed in time's up. That's your behind. Like, it wasn't no go stand in the corner. You know, my parents had no problems. They didn't spare the rod at all. And so we live what we learn and we learn what we live. When my children were coming up, I had the benefit of being sober, but I still had the old mentality that I needed to punish them when they got out of line. I remember my son, I came home one day from work. I done bought a house and I done bought stuff and I got cars and I got all this stuff, and I come home and I smell smoke. And I don't know what the smoke is, but I can smell it. And I start trying to find out where this burnt smell is coming from. And I go in the bathroom and I see little pieces of burnt paper all over the place. And what I realize, because I look in the toilet, there's pieces of a comic book. And I figured out that my son was playing with fire. And it must have got out of control. And he tried to throw it in the sink and all the ashes went everywhere. And then he threw it in the toilet. And I thought to myself, see, I'm going to tell you, I'm going to be honest with you. I'm not going to tell you my first thought was my son could have hurt himself because I'm an alcoholic. My first thought was he could have burned up all my stuff. That's my first thought. Because I'm selfish. I'm selfish and I'm self-centered. That was my first thought, is he could have burnt the house down and burnt up all my stuff. I needed to beat him. My mind told me, oh, he needed to get the belt. But before I did that, I've learned, because you people taught me, that I can't react, that I need to learn how to respond. And so I picked up the phone and I called my sponsor. And I said, hey, sponsor, my son was playing with fire and he could have burnt up all my stuff and yada, yada, yada. And I think I need to beat him. And my sponsor said, well, you might need to beat him. But before you beat him, why don't you try this? Why don't you go rent the movie Backdraft? This is a movie about how unpredictable fire is and what happens when fire takes place in a household and you open doors or open cabinets and the draft comes in and it burns. So I go rent this movie Backdraft, and I sat down and watched it with my son, and he got it. That fire was dangerous and unpredictable. And I went back to my sponsor and I said, hey, sponsor, I watched the movie with him and I think he got it. And he said, good, good, good. But my mind said, I still think I need to beat him though. That was my mind. I think I need, because I just think, you know, because that's where I come from. You learn what you live. And so he said, well, you may need to beat him. You may need to. But before you do that, why don't you try this? Why don't you take him down to the UCLA burn unit and take him on the burn ward and let him see what happens to little kids that play with fire? I took my son down to the UCLA burn unit and we walked that floor, and it not only changed him, it changed me. See, because now my stuff was irrelevant. When I saw what happened to children that play with fire, it changed me and it changed him. And I never had to beat him. When his brother came along, who's 10 years younger than him, and when his brother came along, his brother couldn't get near the stove. He would be like, hot, hot. He would not let his little brother. I never had to do it. That lesson he carried. I don't think he even played with fire to this day. He don't play with fireworks. He don't mess around with fire. You people taught me that. See, because I didn't know how to be a father. I didn't know how to be a stand-up guy. When I got to the rooms, I remember, you know, once you get sober, your hormones start raging. And so, you know, you want to run through people's lives in sobriety. I remember that the women in Alcoholics Anonymous taught me how to be a man. I didn't want to be standing up in a meeting and looking across the room, speaking and looking at 4, 5, 6, 10 people that I had been laid down with that I didn't have a relationship with. So I didn't do that. I didn't date inside the rooms like that. I remember one young lady gave me a key, and she's got probably 5 or 7 years more than I do. I was at a convention, and this is when I was early in sobriety. And she gave me a room key. I never used the key. I saw her 4 years later and I thanked her. And she said, thank you for what? I said, because you gave me an opportunity to be a man and stand on principle, because I made a decision that I was not going to be that guy. And it's one thing to talk about it. It's another thing to have to live it. It's another thing to practice these principles in your affairs. It's one thing when it's something you don't want to do. It's another thing, something that you want to do, but you know you shouldn't do, and you are unable to pull that off. I get to see the man that I want to be because you guys gave me an opportunity to be that man. I get to be the father I want to be because you guys taught me how to be a father. Alcoholics Anonymous for me is more than just about not drinking. It's about being a stand-up guy. It's about being the person that I wanted to be. I can tell you, you know, if I could be anybody in the world, if I could be Jay-Z or Obama, I could be anybody I wanted in the world, I'd want to be me. And I don't mean nothing to y'all, but it means something to me, because I never wanted to be me. I never thought I was good enough. I never thought I was important enough. I never thought I was handsome enough. I never wanted to be me. You guys gave me an opportunity to tap in to a part of me that let me know I'm okay. And it's okay to be me. I thank God, because what ended up happening was I got into treatment and I did everything y'all told me to do. I got me a sponsor. I worked those steps. I started going to meetings. I got me a commitment. I even got some sponsees. If you want to get grateful, work with a newcomer. You want to get real, real grateful, you know, because as we get time around here, you know, I started at some point in my recovery looking forward at the things that I didn't accomplish. And while I'm looking forward, it seems like I'm never getting to where I want to be. But if you take a moment and look back, you'll see how far you've come. And then where you're trying to get to ain't so important. It's where you at. It's where you at. Where I'm at is I'm in a real cool space. I'm in a real cool place. I like my life and I live the life that I've always wanted to live. I'm grateful. My kids is good. I'm good. I've got friends that are happy to see me. And when they see me, I light up because they light me up. And this is a beautiful place to be, man. Alcoholics Anonymous is not the, you know, they say it's the last house on the block, but it's the first stop for me. I wouldn't want to be anywhere else. I don't want to go nowhere else. You know, this program has afforded me to be a father to my children. I did some really bad things when I was drinking and using. One of them landed me up in jail. And when my son was 16, his mother came to me and she said, out of all the men that I know, if I want my son to grow up to be like anybody, I'd want him to be like you. Will you raise him? I don't know if that means nothing to you, but for somebody who's unreliable, unstable, constantly in and out, to have someone entrust their most precious gift, my son, to me, and allow me to raise him, was an amazing thing. And that could have never happened without you. That could have never happened without this program. And I was able to have him finish school and put him through college and set him up with a business. And I was able to do a lot of things that you people taught me how to do right here in these rooms. Alcoholics Anonymous is an amazing place. It transforms lives and it touches people all around you. You never know how far this program may reach. I've had people come tell me that they heard me say or share something that I don't even remember saying. I think it's because I didn't say it. I mean, it came out of my mouth, but it wasn't me, if you understand what I mean. And they say that did something for them. And I say, that wasn't me, that was God. See, because God uses whomsoever he chooses. Before I speak at a meeting, I always ask that the words that come out of my mouth be not the words that you hear, but the words that God would have you hear, and that I'm just speaking. This is an amazing program, and I love how God transforms the lives of each and every one of us. You know, the COVID virus was a terrible thing for a lot of people. But for AA, this is amazing. I've met people like all across the world that I would have never known. I've got friendships and relationships with people I sponsor somebody I've never even met. I'm talking about I've never even seen them on Zoom. They asked me to sponsor them. I got a phone number. I've never seen them on Zoom. I don't know what they look like. And if I was standing next to them in the street, I wouldn't know who they were. But this message can be transmitted. It doesn't have to be face to face. This message can be transmitted and this work is valid. It's just necessary that we do it. Like I said, if you want to get grateful, there's some things that you can do to get grateful. You know, sometimes when I'm feeling ungrateful, I take off my watch and I don't wear it. And I keep looking at my wrist because I'm used to looking at my watch and I go, oh, wow. That gives me something to be grateful for because it was a time when I didn't have no watch. I can get grateful for very little things, like the fact that I woke up in my room and not in a jail cell. I don't know. This program has given me a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm going to say this and I'm going to close up. You know, there was a man and he fell in a hole and it was a deep hole. And he couldn't get out of this hole. He couldn't seem to make his way out of this hole. And he said, I can't die like this. So he tried to climb and he clawed and he almost got to the top and he slipped and he fell back down in the hole. And he said, man, I'm in trouble. I may not be able to get out of this hole. And then here comes down the road a truck driver. and the truck driver pulled over to relieve himself, and he heard these cries for help. He said, "Help, help." And the truck driver went and looked down in the hole and said, "Ooh, God." And the man said, "Can you help me? I've been in this hole a long time and I can't get out this hole." And the truck driver said, "Don't worry about it. I got a shop up the way. I'm gonna go get my tow truck and I'm gonna come back. I'm gonna pull you out this hole." And the truck driver went away and he never came back. And the man said, "I can't die like this. I got to get out this hole." So he climbed and he clawed and he tried to get out the hole and he slipped and he fell back down in the hole. And he said, "I guess I'm going to die like this." And then all of a sudden, here comes a preacher down the road, and the preacher's singing Amazing Grace, and he got a Bible under his arm, and he hears the calls for help, help, help. And he walks over and he looks down in the hole. He sees the man in the hole. He says, "My sweet Jesus." And the man says, "Can you please help me? I've been in this hole a long time. I can't get out this hole. Can you help me out this hole?" And the pastor said, "No problem. My church is up the road. I'm gonna go get some of my congregation members. We're gonna get a rope. We're gonna pull you out this hole." And the pastor went away and he never came back. And the man said, "I can't die like this. I got to get out this hole. I'm going to give it one last try." And he climbed and he clawed and he got to the top and his fingernails was bleeding and he slipped and he fell down in the hole again and he gave up. And he just laid there and he said, "I guess I'm going to die like this." And then here comes a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous coming from a meeting. He got a big book under one arm and a 12 and 12 under the other. And he's walking, living happy, joyous, and free. And he hears the cries for help, help, help. And the sober member walked over to the hole and he looked down in the hole and he saw the man. And the man said, "Can you help me? I'm dying." And the sober member walked away from the hole and he put down his big book. He put down a 12 and 12. He's tightened up his bootstraps and he rolled up his sleeves and he took off running. And he wasn't running away from the hole. He was running towards the hole. He ran towards the hole. He jumped up in the air and jumped right down in the hole. And the man said, "Why did you do that? Why did you come down here? I've been stuck in this hole. I'm dying in this hole. I can't get out this hole. Why would you come down here? You was my last hope." And the sober member did no ranting. He did no raving. He waited till the man got quiet and became sweetly reasonable. And he told the man this. He said, "The reason I came down in this hole, because I've been in this hole before and I came to show you a way out. And I'm here to share with you today that the reason I came down in this hole is because I've been in this hole before and we came to show you a way out. This is an amazing program. I come from sleeping under the freeway and I truly believe that God picked me up and he dusted me off and he gave me the life you see me living for one reason and one reason only, because I would come here today and tell you that he did. And I truly believe that my God keeps me sober one day at a time, because the next time you'll see me, you'll know that he does. Thank y'all for letting me share."